This is Comedy Store Wrestling.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the world famous Comedy Store here in Hollywood, California for another episode of Comedy Store Wrestling. My name is Eddie Torres, and I'm being joined, as always, by the inappropriate one, Earl Skakel. How are you, brother?
I'm embarrassed I wore this shirt.
He's the other Sheik.
Right.
Yeah, he's embarrassed because we have a special guest in the house.
The real Sheik.
The real, the almighty Sheik himself, Joseph Samael. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you for coming on time and
early. Like, no one's done that.
Like, so, a professional.
Like a professional.
Yeah, what's that?
Yeah. So, you know, for people that are watching and listening that aren't fully aware, you are, like you just told us, the longest reigning champion, tag champion of California wrestling. Is that true?
Me and Jacob fought two as War Beast are the longest reigning and defending champions in the history of California wrestling. I tell everybody that. I walk around and I just tell my mailman. I tell everybody.
You know, you are, I don't know what the correct title is, but... runner, booker, operator of... PCW Ultra? What's your official title for PCW Ultra?
Booker.
Booker. Promote? No, you don't.
Promoter.
Promoter. Okay.
All
right.
You do it all.
Producer.
Producer. Also tag champion. So you're work as well?
Yeah. Pretty much everything. Yeah.
That's so you're like Tony Khan, but you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
You are also a former NWA heavyweight champion. You know, that's really impressive. That's something that not everyone can say they have in their resume.
Sure. Yeah, it was. It's a nice feather in the cap. It's a lends to credibility for sure. As a kid, I grew up watching the NWA. That was the first wrestling I saw when I was three, and Harley Race was the world champion, and he had that belt. You know, so being able to have that belt one day was pretty surreal and nuts, you know?
Yeah, and that's the old school where, you know, that's the belt.
Like, yeah, that's the belt.
They don't just make a prop for you to have at home, sure. You know? It's the same belt. That's crazy.
I mean, that's what I first started watching. I wasn't a WWF guy yet, so, you know, I saw Magnum TA and Nikita Koloff, who I really thought was from Russia.
I got a great Nikita Koloff story.
Oh, I just bought his book because I really just found out he's from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. It's a whole scam.
It was kind of weird to talk to him for the first time and without the accent, but he's very, very, very religious, like ultra religious. So me and my partner at the time, Steve Madison, we were wrestling the Warlord and Billy Gunn. I can't remember, but it was in Florida and it was a show that was for a church, and we were the bad guys and we did something pretty dastardly, and then we ended up, you know, getting our comeuppance. And before we were going to leave the ring, Nikita Koloff came down to the ring and he started cutting a promo on us. And he started talking about God and telling us to turn our life over to the Lord. And then he made everybody come down to the ring and put their hands and pray on the ring. And we couldn't get out of the ring.
Wow.
It was really awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So who did you, I thought I saw it online, but can you tell us a story of when you won the title? Like, who did you beat for the
NWA championship?
Yeah, yeah.
So I beat Colt Cabana in who is a, you know,
popular guy right now.
Yeah, I read that and I was like, no way.
Yeah, yeah. I beat Colt Cabana in Florida, and it was a real messy deal with the NWA at that time. That regime was really, really special. And
this is before Billy Corgan, right?
This is two regimes before Billy Corgan.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So it was there was a board of directors and there was members and all that, and members would pay dues and then you would go around and wrestle and they would book the champion and this and that. And I worked a lot in Japan and everything like that. But yeah, the match was with Colt Cabana in Florida and 2011-ish.
Okay, all
something
right.
Like that.
Now, because it's such a hot topic with Mr. Cabana, I mean, how do you, you know, was he good to work with? Was he cool?
No.
No.
Fucking terrible. fucking terrible.
Okay.
Yeah, he was very difficult and holds a grudge to this day. And like he, so what happened with him was, I guess he got the championship. And nobody told him that he had to drop it 3 weeks later, and he was pretty sore about it. Me personally, if it was me, you know, trying to do business in that sort of environment, I would have probably been hot too, you know.
Yeah.
But I was doing business for myself. He was doing business for himself. This is a selfish business. We're our own companies. We're trying to make it, you know. So. I was, you know, looking out for me. He was looking out for him. But I don't hold a grudge with anybody, really. I mean, my slate's pretty clean. Everything's cool with me. So
well, that's where you and I are different.
Yeah. This man knows how to hold a grudge.
Yeah, so. I get it out. You know, I get it out when it happens.
Yeah, he gets to stab people with rail spikes. I don't know. You don't get to do that.
You know, we talked before this about Warrior and how he held grudges, and then he let them all go, and he died the next day.
Yeah, don't let him go.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid if I'm like, hey, Jeff Ross, you and I are good. I'm dead in 10 minutes. But, like, when you say he didn't know he was going to drop the belt, like, is that just a lapse in management? Not being bad communication.
It was. You know, there's a lot of there's way more to the story, and we could have a whole podcast on that. And
we got time.
You know, there was multiple people. When you have a company that has a president, and underneath are all people with competing businesses, they all want the belt on their show.
Right.
So there was a promoter that had a television show that but basically wrote his show around the belt. And I guess he was under the assumption that it was never leaving. So he ended up getting pretty bent out of shape. And I believe they transferred it to Cabana before, because the other guy that had it, his guy, they transferred it to Cabana because Cabana was this internet darling. And he had all these friends, and they were just trying to hurt my business. It never hurt my business because heat draws money. So if everybody hates you in wrestling and you're a bad guy, you get paid more. You work more. You get booked more. So, yeah.
I got to send you clips of the nuclear heat that this gentleman got at MLW.
MLW was one of them that was recorded.
Oof.
Sure, yeah.
Bro, I'm watching the clip, and he's in the ring with Fatu, and the entire crowd is throwing shit at him. Like, everyone in the crowd. It's just bombarding bottles, and it's just crazy.
There's ways, just like in comedy, right? There's ways to work to conduct a crowd.
100%.
And there's ways to move them right. There's ways to move them left. There's ways to incense them. There's ways to bring them down. So you just pour gas on the fire, and you get them to where they're gonna spill over, and then you get out of there. You boogie before it happens.
Before you get taken out.
Yeah, man, that's wild. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the experiences I had at PCW Ultra. It was my first time there, and you guys came out for your match, and you just went into the crowd, and it was just like a, you know, like a, what do you call it? A false count anywhere.
Yeah.
Kind of chaotic.
We call it all violence is legal.
All violence is legal. Yeah. It's on your shirt. I just remember standing there and seeing this chaos, because it was like Fatu was over there, and all you hear is just tables breaking and chairs smashing, and he's over here stabbing some dude with a rail spike, and there's blood flying. I'm like, I didn't feel endangered, but I did feel like this is chaos.
Yeah.
You know?
So what we do is, you know, we basically have high flyers, we have luchadors, we have women, we have legends. Me and Fatu, we are the danger. You know, we are like a live act, like a live band, you know, like a punk rock band. So when we come out there, the fans have just a completely different experience. And I think if every single act, if you will, has their own lane, then a family of five can walk away and they could each have a different favorite wrestler. So it's like it's done by design, and we just happen to be – that fits us perfect, you know what I mean? So –
yeah, I think I put that in my notes. Family-friendly violence.
Yes. It goes together. It should be a T-shirt.
Well, I mean, wrestling fans, you know, there are some that like the luchadors and the high flyers. There's others like me who, you know, I like the big guys.
Yeah.
It's just the visual of, like, you know, Rick Rude against Big John Studd.
Sure.
You know, I'm dating myself with those two references, but you know, I do think, and some like the female matches, and I just saw my first female death match. It was wild, and I don't know if I'm saying I'm a fan of that, but it was interesting. Like,
yeah,
so you know,
it's always cool to see something unique. You know, something that you're like, whoa, I don't see that shit every day. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And your show, like I said, PCW Ultra, had like so many moments like that for me as a new fan to independent wrestling. Because when I went to your show was the first one I went to when I moved to LA. I had never been to an independent show. I had only done WWE or, you know, seen stuff on TV or whatever. And just seeing the diversity of it. Like, I never seen Penta. And he was there, and I'm like, ooh, this guy is amazing. And not only talent-wise, but he looks cool. He had the skull makeup, and never seen anything like that. I hadn't seen Lucha Underground, so I didn't really know about that history. Yeah. I learned about that afterwards. But, you know, you have a really good eye for talent.
Thank you.
That I think. Like, most of the guys that I've seen that have been champions in PCW have gone on to become, you know, like Shane, you know, Swerve Strickland's in AEW.
Yeah. Penta. Cross just went. Yeah.
Cross just went over to WWE. So... what do you attribute that to, like, being able to identify these talents that, like, what are you looking for when you see these guys?
Well, I was trained in the 90s, so it was a completely different era of wrestler where, I mean, we were trained properly, and I don't mean to sound like, oh, everybody today, these kids are not trained properly, but these kids are not trained properly. you know, it's like we were trained the right way, and the hows, the whens, the whys. So I look for guys that are convincing. I look for guys that have that intangible, you know, great gear. I look for pros, you know, guys that are pros. A lot of my, you know, people bang on my door and I don't, you know, answer all the time because I really am looking for TV ready guys. I want my show to be, you know, that's probably the wrong word to use, but the elite, you know, the elite of independent wrestling, you know. Yeah. I mean, everybody hates Tessa Blanchard now. It's cool to hate Tessa Blanchard, but before everybody hated her, Tessa had a long run with us. I still think she's one of the great, not just greatest women's wrestlers. She's one of the greatest wrestlers in the world. Maybe one day she'll have her redemption. I don't know, but we had her and we showcased her. It was an amazing time. We had Penta. We were the first guys to bring Rob Van Dam back to the scene. When Rob won the championship in our company, nobody could believe that because legends would come and go. Mm. So just, you know, bringing in those guys like Rob Van Dam, those guys like Muda, so that they can bring – so you have these guys that are there, the Shane Stricklands, the Hammerstones, the Fatus. But then you bring in the Billy Guns, the Mudas, the Steamboats and all that so they can just really – pull them up. Oh, you know, so I like to have the legends there. I like to have guys that are super, super crisp already. Guys that know themselves, guys that understand their own gimmick. I don't have a lot of copycat guys that, oh, I saw this and that. I do have some younger guys, but the younger guys that I have and the younger girls that I have are people that I see talent in that I want to like make sure that they don't go down the wrong. And, you know, I'm like, man, that's a good wrestler. Like I can really like shave a couple steps off of their journey. I could give them a couple, you know, tips. I can put them with some legends and let them agent their matches. And then, you know, they grow leaps and bounds from that. When they wrestle people that are beneath them at that stage, it just brings them down, you know, with bad habits. And that's why a lot of times these kids will just want to wrestle their peers and they just want to play. They just want to go out there and like skateboard and just do tricks. And, you know, and if you're thinking about it as a hobby, that's fine. But I've always thought about it as a business. And you see the way we run our show, it's vendors and beer and food and, you know, lighting and the, you know, best wrestlers in the world and autographs and legends. So
and you have a lot of meet and greets too.
Yeah,
with the legends.
Yeah. You know, we're running a business, you know, we're running a show that, and the fans understand that as well. I mean, the fans are front end, like they get in on time, you know, the show starts at the same time every time. They know what to expect. They trust us, you know? So I know that's off topic a bit, but you know, it is what it is. The fan experience there is super important to me.
Is it hard to please the fans from the standpoint of you know, like I'm the type of guy, when you said Muta, my eyes lit up. I'm like, oh my God, I would love to see him spit the green mist.
Sure.
Like walk away happy. But then you have people like in Eddie's age range who want to see more high flying stuff. Mm-hmm. And then people younger than him, like the teenagers, they probably want to see a combo of all that stuff. How do you please every age range?
Yeah, that's why the show's like a smorgasbord. You know, it's like it has all these different wrestlers on each show in their lane. And then you're trying to run, you know, threads of stories. However, when you're running every couple months, it's really, really difficult without television and commentary. Like, you really take that for granted. When you're watching wrestling, like, somebody will talk to me and they'll say, oh, you should book this, this, and that. I go, well, that's a TV angle. And they're like, oh, what are you talking about? And they don't understand the difference between a house show live event and a television event. There's so many different tools in television that are tools to tell stories that we don't have the luxury of. You'll see that on the tape once it's released a week later or 2 weeks later. But to answer your question, we just book a multitude of wrestlers, and I think the magic as far as that's concerned is just being able to have everybody in their own lane and to pace each match properly. This way it's like you don't have any letdowns. You don't have any big like, oh man, I saw this thing and then that was that. You got to kind of build the things, and then you got to kind of cleanse the palate. Like you'll have these matches that are pure wrestling after a bunch of chaos in it, and then you'll have something else pick up, like a promo will come after that. And it's just the pacing of it all, and then the complexity of the styles and and all that stuff.
Yeah, and you even do comedy. You do comedy ratchet.
We do everything.
Like I've seen Kikutaru on there. Seen, you know, I don't know if, what's that guy? It wasn't Cassidy, but have you had Orange Cassidy on the show?
No, we haven't. But it's just like a great movie. A great movie has suspense. It has drama. It has funny. It has comedy. So you want to take these fans on a ride. And the other thing is you don't want the thing to be 5 hours long. You want it to be 2 hours, maybe 2.5, maybe 3 if you're doing a big show. But you can't expect these people to be sitting there, you know, for 4 or 5 hours. And some of these independent shows, they got 25 matches. So
Big shows. I mean, WrestleMania is like 8 hours long. I can't sit around for that
long. It's crazy.
Well, that last AEW, not the last one, but the second.
All Out had like 16 matches.
It's crazy.
I had to drink Gatorade. I was exhausted.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Where do you decide to put the violent match in the card, because that can be a real palate destroyer.
It could be an off-putting,
yeah. What do you put at? Like, would you put, say, Muta after, like, one of those wacky...
It's really difficult. So it's almost like when you do a match, and it's like you'll have a young kid, he'll do his finishing move, and then he'll do something else, and you'll say, why did you do something else after that? You end big. You end on your biggest, like you end on your big joke. Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but
not in my case.
So you know, because you can't get them any higher, right? So the matches that are crazy, it's been really, really difficult for us to have anybody follow those matches. So they're typically main event matches, and they also something about the War Beast gimmick. It just lends to blood feuds, like the stuff with Homicide and Kingston and Slice Boogie and Papo Esco and just all these guys. It gets really, really dramatic, and the promos are great and everything. So there's a lot of stakes involved for these matches, as well as all the violence. So it's difficult to follow those. Sometimes we'll pull back and we won't wrestle, or sometimes, you know, we'll do something bombastic for a finish. Like this next show, we've got the first time ever Ultra Vault match, and it's four competitors are going to get locked inside of a cage, and there's all these things that are going to happen and things like that. So that's going to be cool, and that's going to decide the Ultra champion. Whoever escapes will escape as the Ultra champion.
And is there a referee in a match like this?
There will be a referee. God help
him. Why is there a ref when it's anything goes?
Well, somebody needs to raise the hand, right?
I don't know. Maybe we won't put a ref in
there. No, I'm not trying to...
Maybe we'll kill the ref.
Oh, well,
there you go.
That would get some views. Yes.
Well, last one of the shows that I went to, I thought someone was definitely going to get like killed. It was, I think it was a match with you guys and these two big guys. They looked like they were wearing like SWAT gear, kind of, but they were
Oh yeah.
And they came out and this is
the Border Patrol.
Yes, Border Patrol. Dude, and this is in Wilmington.
Like them already.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's their merch.
Dude, it was in Wilmington, so it was like a heavy Mexican audience. Yeah. And they come out, they're like, "We gotta come out here and send you back to your country."
Yeah, they were all stiff on the mic. Yeah,
and everyone the crowd was like, "Whoa!" Like, "What the?" Yeah, it was. I thought I was like, "Man,
we fought outside of the building." And there's a video on YouTube. Me and one of them peeled off into the street, and a car almost hit me.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, it would have been awesome. Yeah, no, it would have been a good thing. It would have been good for views. It would have been all famous right now.
It's all about the clicks.
It's all about the clicks, baby.
Oh, man. Tell me a little bit about the next show. You said it's in October?
It is in October. It's on the 21st of October, and we have Viva Van, who is one of the hottest female wrestlers in the business right now. She's just victory after victory after victory. She's got 150 belts. She's on WWE. She's on AEW. She's going crazy. We've got her. We've got the legend Sumi Sakai coming back, former Ultra Woman champion.
Nice.
And she's coming. This is her final lap. This is her retirement tour. She's been in All Japan Women's Wrestling. She's been in MMA. She's done it all. She's been a champ for us. She's been a Ring of Honor everywhere and back. So we're super excited to have Sumi back and you know, pay our respects to her, and maybe we'll see her more if she wins the belt. Maybe this will be the last time we see Sumi. We have Sin Bodhi, Shath, and Hammerstone are the three men announced so far for the Ultra Vault. There's one man left. You're going to have War Beast there. You're going to have Shane Haste there, who has been tearing it up in Japan. Australian talent, super awesome, former WWE. We got Puma King coming back, Lucha Libre legend, and I can't spoil it. I haven't confirmed it yet. Well, Puma King, and we have a Lucha Libre legend possibly coming in. I haven't confirmed it yet, so I can't announce it.
Okay.
But yeah, man,
by the way, but speaking of Puma King, my wife, I took her to one of your shows, and she saw Puma King, and she's like, he is. If Goldust had a cat.
Yes, he's Goldust's cat. Goldust's cat.
Also, by the way, Hammerstone threw Marco Stunt at my wife at your show. Yes. That was fun because I was off getting a beer, and I look over and I just see Marco Stunt flying now into my wife. I'm like, no! Yeah, yeah.
Now everybody's throwing Marco Stunt. That happened first at PCW Ultra. He got thrown into the eighth row by Hammerstone. Oh, Hammerstone nice. Will be there. And all of his muscles will be there with him. So he's.
Did you announce a legend yet? Because I know every show has a legend. Last one had Booker T.
Right. We haven't announced our legend yet. We're working that out still.
Okay.
We just announced Puma King today.
Nice.
Who is so fun. We have Lince Dorado coming back.
Nice.
The number one contender, former WWE.
Lucha House Party.
Lucha House Party. Yeah, man. It's going to be a good one.
Hell yeah. Now, finally, I wanted to ask you, I know you've talked about this before, but I'm sure Earl's interested since he's wearing the Sheik shirt. You know, how'd you get the name? How did that all happen? You know, who gave you the blessings and all of that?
Because there are a lot of sheiks, like
there was
Sheik Adnan.
But he was.
I'm old school. Yeah.
So there was the original Sheik, the Iron Sheik, and then me. As far as the wrestling sheiks, there was more, I'm sure. But so I was in a tag team. Me and my partner were going back and forth mainly to Puerto Rico. And then my partner decided he didn't want to wrestle anymore. I always preferred tag team wrestling. I love tag team wrestling. And at the time, we were wrestling more of the style of the Andersons, Gene and Ole. And it was real body part, you know, we picking body parts. It was a really fun way to work. And then he decided to go into MMA. So when he went into MMA, a friend of mine, Steve Madison, had a show at the Cuban Club that was a completely different crowd. It was like they were buying entertainment. So he goes, "Hey, you know, we're gonna have a fun show there. It's not gonna be any of our fans. It's this club. You know, we're gonna do other gimmicks." So I go, "Oh, you know, Sean's leaving. Let me try this thing. I don't know. Everywhere I would go, people would say, 'What are you? Iranian? Are you Italian? Are you Spanish? You know, so nobody knew. So I was kind of racially ambiguous, and I had light eyes. So people were always kind of. So I did this thing. I went out there. It was, you know, super primitive. I just had the, you know, whatever. I didn't have it all dialed in yet, and it worked. So I was like, oh shit, I got something here. So I think I'm gonna do this. So the very next week, I was on a show with Sabu, and I had kind of. I never worked in the ring with Sabu, but we drove in Puerto Rico in cars and stuff like that. So I had a rapport with him. So I went to Sabu and I asked him, because I wasn't thinking of the Iron Sheik, because the Iron Sheik was not the gimmick. That was the cartoon version of it. The original Sheik was the serial killer version of it. He was a maniac. He was a bloodthirsty maniac, one of the greatest heels of all time. So I went to Sabu and I asked him, and he was super cool about it, and there was a little exchange, but that's for off the air.
All right.
It wasn't a blowjob.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, then you can tell it on the air, then.
But, yeah, so then after that, I just, started doing it, and before I knew it, I ended up getting contacted by the NWA. It was Florida champion, Midwest champion, North American champion, and then the world, and then started rocking and rolling with it. And yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
And does the Iron Sheik know? I mean, I've met him. I'll guess he doesn't.
I don't think he knows what's going on right now, right?
He didn't know what was going on 7 years ago when I met him.
Yeah, I would love to book the Iron Sheik, but he doesn't
fly. Good luck
fly.
With that.
Yeah.
I can introduce you to his managers.
Is it Eric Sims?
Well, he was so out of it 7 years ago. We had a roast for him here, and his manager was like, hey, why don't you dress up as the Ultimate Warrior, and the Sheik will think it's him. Now, I got a good body for a comic, but I don't look like the Ultimate Warrior.
You don't want the Sheik thinking you're the Ultimate Warrior.
So I get the tassels, the makeup, and I walk back there, and he tried to fight me because he really thought I was the Warrior.
Is there video of this?
There is, and then he kissed me. I'm like, hey, man, this ain't no Billy and Chuck angle.
Yeah.
Eat it.
I have one last question. I wanted to ask it earlier because you're talking about it, but it's still sticking in my mind. You were saying, you know, you're in when you're running a promotion, mm-hmm. you're in business for yourself. You're trying to raise your company up, but you know we've seen successes in like collaborative efforts. Like you've done it with Defy and a couple other people. You know, more recently AEW with New Japan. With the Forbidden Door thing, why is there so much, I guess, beef amongst local indie promoters, and why isn't there more effort to work together to kind of raise every, like, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats kind of idea?
Well, because, you know, if everybody's a chef, they all want to cook their meal, you know what I mean? So it's like, my meal's great. Oh, taste mine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yours isn't as good as mine. That's all it is.
A lot of egos.
Yeah, it's like there's an old saying in the wrestling business, and it pretty much goes for every business, is if 10 of us go out to dinner, we're not going to be able to agree on the toppings of a pizza. Mm. You know, so it's just that way. And people always understand it's a good idea, but you just have to find out where it works and where it doesn't. You can't force it. You know, there's certain things you just can't do. Like you can create a title and the title can move through both companies. Or if a company like Defy doesn't have a women's championship, they could use yours like they've done. Mm. And it showcases us. It helps them out. And their fans want to see it. So, you know, it's just, you just got to figure out how to work together where it makes sense. You know, it can't be, hey, my top guy is going to your promotion and you're going to wipe the floor with him. You know, it's got to make sense. And it's difficult to, back in the day, Giant Baba and all these guys of that era always did the DQs. Like how many times did Bruiser Brody and Abdullah the Butcher DQ every single match? Nobody ever lost. You can't do that in this era. You know, you know, and that's one thing Kevin Sullivan taught me. He said, you know, the reason why your fans always come back and the reason why, you know, you've got such a good rapport with them and they trust you is because you never screwed them. You never gave them screw job finishes. You never sold them something and then pulled the rug out from under them in a bad way. Sometimes you turn the car right when they think you're going to go left and you surprise them, even if it's what they don't want. But you've never, oh, this is going to happen, and then it's a dud. It's a screw job finish. And it's like, you know, I hate when companies do that. And
so do I.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it makes it really, really difficult to work together, you know, unless you agreed on everything or you planned it out. And then a lot of these companies are not real businesses.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people are not very bright. So like me and Jim from Defy, we can talk and we're like, we'll plan stuff out and we're men of our word and we understand business and we're intelligent about it. So it works. But, you know, you get with some of these other guys and it's just...
Name some names. Fucking, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Well, pretty much.
He will.
You know, yeah, everybody else.
I mean, you, for years, it was when WCW guys would go to the WWE, you know, and I think the greatest example of what we're all talking about is when Sting went over there and he dropped to Triple H his first match. Like, that's insane to me. That's
a petty thing that you know, it's like people want to, you know, it's like... Well, Ric Flair had a kind of similar thing, or Harley Race when he came over there, they called him the King because Harley was the king of wrestling. So they were making fun of him. They were making fun of Dusty with the polka dots. It was like it's you know, people with big egos. You know, they're petty. They can't let it go.
Wouldn't they draw, like, in my mind, you build up Dusty, Harley Race, what The Rock did to Booker T, basically burying him with one sentence, going, "Who are you?"
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a quicker bury job than that. What they did with Sting, they didn't build him up. His job's at Triple H, and then he's on a Monday Night Raw segment with Bo Dallas. Like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, it's a weird thing in wrestling where that's why they always change everybody's name. Well, they change everybody's name because they want to own the IP. But you know, it's, if I didn't build it, then it can't be. It's not good. You know, where I'm going to use the guys I've built to beat that. You know, it's just they don't want to push anything that they didn't do. Where I would say, wow, that's a talent, but.
Right.
My whole career of booking has always been working with other outside talent. I've only created or really mentored a select few people, and I can only, you know, I can't take credit for anybody's talent or anything. But I mean, I can only take some credit for some of this stuff. But most everybody I've used, I've been playing with others' chess pieces, right? So I see it differently. Where Vince was on the top of the mountain. And he sees it differently than I do. And, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Vince, that was all Vince's mentality. I feel like Triple H thinks more like you now that he's running the company. Because he likes pulling people from the independents.
Yeah.
You know, and like, oh, hey, people love Adam Cole.
But he's got a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's
Vince, basically, and I don't know this for certain, but he kind of feels like he owns the business. You know what I mean?
Kind of does.
Yeah, so it's like, that's the way it seems. I mean, again, I don't know for certain. But where Triple H seems to be, and also it's a great time when you're taking over a regime. Yeah. It's a great time to be generous and open-minded. And, you know, you can't just be, now I'm, you know, this terrible dictator. And, you know, because then nobody's gonna want to work with him and everybody's going to think it's the same. So he's got this real open-arm policy that is really working well. And the morale in WWE has really shown in the product.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good time for wrestling right now. And I think Triple H taking over and has really exposed Vince in the way that he had probably been around for a little too long. You know, we all some you know,
the fans already felt it, but they didn't want to say it.
Yeah, and nobody could say it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you know, he just stayed at the party too long, and it's really exposing the other company. As you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know. So
what other company are you talking about?
I mean,
AEW.
Yeah.
Well, because he's like a fan with money, which I love. Like he's like me and Eddie, but with billions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just think, and I'm a AEW mark, if there's such a term. But now the honeymoon period's over.
Sure.
Like, and it's like, okay, man, what, you know?
Well, he's fell into a trap that he's created that he didn't have the experience to understand it was coming. He's fallen victim to this his own, you know, he's made his bed and he's.
How did he not see it coming? It was the same problem. It was the same problem. He saw it in WCW.
And again, this is completely hypothetical. I don't know shit about shit, but you know, when you're fantasizing about things, you talk to people every day, I'm sure, that they say, oh, blah, blah, blah. And if you think about it, you're like, oh, that's not really going to happen. Mm. Like, people, they fantasize about a result that they want, and they think that's just going to magically happen. And, you know, he just doesn't have the experience. Now, if he was smart, he would say, these are my tools. I've got Dean Malenko, Arn Anderson, this guy, that guy, the other guy. I've got all these, as Punk said, brilliant minds. I've got and him included, Punk included. You've got all these people that have been to the dance. He hasn't been to the dance, but he could get into doors nobody can get into. He's got the money nobody's got. He's got the contacts that he could talk to network people. There is so many tools in his tool pouch. He just needs to let the people do what he doesn't know. Like he needs to utilize his team.
Yeah, we've been saying that here, man. Like, he needs Jericho to help him out with creative or something.
Ooh, I don't know about that, but well I think that Jericho is the most brilliant political player of the modern era. And you know, he just is always in the right spot. So, and if you look at Jericho, you just go, you know where the money is. Mm-hmm. You follow Jericho.
Yeah.
He's just going where the, you know, and he's very, very smart. Does he know the business? Absolutely. Does he know promotion, how to promote himself? Absolutely. Does he know? Absolutely. But he's still in business for
Jericho.
For himself. Yeah, you know, yeah. So he's got a complete, you know, you got to think of everybody's mindset and motivation. Now, can he help that company? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because why? He's been there and done it at the highest level, you know? So, you know, if they would utilize their guys like that and they wouldn't lean on the people that are internet darlings to come up with these, like, there was this weird campaign over the last 5 years of everything old is wrong. Mm. Wait a minute. The architects of our business built this. So like, you're going to say, oh, we don't write songs like this anymore. The Beatles were wrong. Oh, we don't, Pryor was wrong. Yeah. You know, come on, dude. Like, these are the architects of this art, of this architects of this business. There's formulas for a reason. They worked, yeah. You know, and they can still work. And yes, everything needs updated. Everything, it needs to get translated to the newer generation. However, you don't build a car with the wheels on the roof now. Like, it's like crazy. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, just do what it's supposed, create what it's supposed to be and then modernize it. But don't change everything about it for the sake of changing it and spitting at it and acting like it's everything before was silly, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, that's a perfect way to transition into our top stories of wrestling for the week. I'm going to start at the very top here. Not sure how familiar you are with NXT, but I stopped watching it when it switched over to NXT 2.0. I like the black and gold brand because it showcased, you know, independent guys, yeah. Swerve and Adam Cole and all these guys. But last week or this past NXT at the end, Solo Sikoa won the North American Championship, and then the logo changed from the Nickelodeon vomit to white and gold, and they got rid of the 2.0. So Triple H is getting rid of that bullshit that Vince brought in, mm-hmm. and taking it back to the old school. Not old school, but just the old school NXT. And maybe I'll start watching the show again.
I mean, I love how Triple H, he's, you know, our age. I'm a little old. I think I'm 54. He'll be 56, 57. And he grew up watching NWA. So I do think he's bringing back older belts, better storylines, you know, which is the one thing that drives me wacky about AEW, is they'll start a storyline and then it just disappears.
It's almost like the person writing it has got ADD.
Yeah, well, like they did this thing, and I know we want to talk about this top story, but it drives me nuts. They bring in Will Ospreay, who I did not, I'm embarrassed to say this, I did not know who he was because I don't watch New Japan a lot. And they get me into him. He has a great promo with Kenny Omega. I was like, these guys have, I think, real life heat. And then it's just over. Like, there's no, like, I think Triple H is going to do the opposite. Like, you know, if that was him, he'd have one final match between the two, and then maybe Ospreay gets injured, goes back to Japan. Okay, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm starting to watch WWE more, because I think Triple H is like, we have to have ends to these storylines. We just don't just throw them away.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets it.
Yeah. I think he, like what you were saying about the championships, like, you know, you want everything to look kind of legit. I think maybe WWE was on a merchandising, you know, mindset as far as the spinner belts and the things and, you know, and had a the butterfly belts and this and that. And, you know, maybe they were just trying to.
Even the new, the current belt looks like a toy.
Yeah.
It's just a big logo. That's all it is. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not a championship.
So I think, you know, you'll probably see that changing. I don't watch the product, but what I do is I watch from the internet. So things pop up,
clips,
so kind of get, you know, the gist of what's going on. As far as going back to the black and gold, I think it's a great move. I think that's what everybody wants. You know, there's so many obvious things in wrestling that you give the fans when they want it. Just give them like some of these things, just give it back to them. Like they're going to be happy and then build off of that. They were going completely against the grain with that other brand, and nobody liked it.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And they showed by not watching.
Yeah, I stopped watching.
Yeah,
I used to watch NXT religiously.
Yeah, it was an alternative. And the great thing about NXT prior was the fact that it was so different. And
hard-hitting matches, you know, independent wrestlers. Hopefully that's what it's going back to. And Solo Sikoa, that was a very slick way of getting some gold on him so that when he shows up on SmackDown with the Bloodline, everybody's got gold, except for Sami Zayn. I wish Sami would...
That guy's buried more than a whole cemetery.
Yeah, oh, man.
Unbelievable what they've done to that guy. See an AEW in 2 years, Sam. You and Ziggler.
Yeah, it's him and KO, actually. They'll probably go with it. Anyway.
The decimal point is really good on their check.
Yeah.
It's in the right spot.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, look, Kevin Owens had the opportunity to leave. He's really good friends with the Young Bucks.
Yeah, they just took that decimal and they just...
Yeah, WWE's like, no, don't go anywhere. And we'll give you a title. Don't leave, please. All right, story number two we got. WWE is... This is all obviously dirt sheet bullshit, rumors and whatnot. But the idea is that they want to go into WrestleMania this year with two champions instead of the one unified. But they also don't want Roman Reigns to lose. So now they're open for creative ideas because they don't know what to do. How do we get a belt off of Roman without him losing?
Yeah.
So we're going to get some weird wonky like three-way, four-way where Roman doesn't get pinned. He doesn't technically lose but still loses a belt, I think.
I mean, I'm glad Triple H is in charge for this one because Vince would have, I don't know, Mabel come back or something.
He died. Like,
oh, that'd be even better if he came back. I'm still convinced the Blue Blazer's going to drop down. I'm telling you right now.
Oh, boy.
Sorry, is that too soon? Wait till you hear my... Well, all right, I won't do that joke. But, I'm very happy that Triple H... I have faith in this storyline, no matter what happens. With Vince, it'd be a bra and panties match.
Well, how would you book this? How would you make Roman not lose, but still get a belt off of him? How would you do it? Or a title, sorry. I don't care.
I mean, you've got a big guy in Strowman. You know, I would get him in the mix. You know, if Bray Wyatt were to come back, there's something there. Or Wyatt Six. I don't know what he's getting worse than John Morrison with these names. Jesus Christ. I think Wyatt is the, you know, if he doesn't go to AEW, which I'm assuming there's offers both companies. You talk about the decimal point being right. You know, and that's WrestleMania. It'd be a huge thing if Wyatt came back and somehow beat him where he wasn't pinned so you don't damage his credibility. Because right now, who's on the current roster, I'm kind of over a lot of the I mean, I know Austin Theory is like the new John Cena, you know.
They better not put that belt on John fucking Theory. I mean, it's too soon. The crowd will go nuts, yeah, like in a bad
soon.
Way.
Yeah, it's too soon.
How would you do it? You know what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, so basically what the job is for the booker is to create an opponent for Roman for WrestleMania. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, they're trying to figure out how to get one of the belts off of him at least.
Yeah, so you get that belt off of him in a dastardly way, building up this other opponent, and now he's got a vendetta to get that belt back. I mean, you have to do it in a way to where you're not beating him clean in the middle of the ring. So I think that you're going to have the problem you're going to have is turning Roman babyface in this sense. Mm.
I mean, he's pretty over right now.
Or you can just get a flash pin on him. You know, it's they got all the bells and whistles to put on top of it, and the fans are gonna go with it if they have a sound plan. It's when you've got those two belts and then you unify them in that way. That's one of the pitfalls that you fall into. You know, it's they should just unify that belt and call it a day.
Yeah.
And
that's what I thought they were going to do when they first did it.
What they're doing is it's like when you pull the zipper up over it, you're trying to pull it back. I don't know, man.
You
know,
how about you, John?
I would have Paul Heyman involved. You have Roman running around screaming that he beat everybody. There's nothing left for him to do. You make him to defend both titles in the Rumble. You have everybody gang up on him. He loses the titles, and you find out Heyman did something with the contract, so he only lost one of the two titles.
You can't crush Roman, though.
I mean, if you have 20 people in the Rumble, throw him over.
Yeah, I think you want him to have some sort of a way to. You don't want him to get beat by might, even if it's with 20 people. You want to have him be able to say, that's not how it happened.
Then the only other thing is to have a triple threat or a four way, which I think is just an easy way out, as opposed to like let him dominate for half the Rumble, and then you get some of the bigger guys. You throw Brock back in there, and Brock gets his revenge. He doesn't have to win the Rumble, but he could be part of the team that throws him over. You have Brock, you have Strowman, you could have Bray come back, you can have Edge in there. You have your biggest guys in there. Roman beat Bryan and. An Edge at once, but you just have your biggest guys in there with Roman, and they get him out, and then you find out on Raw the next day the contract was only for one of the titles, not both.
That's a lot.
I mean, there's no way to do it without really fucking over.
If you did an unannounced debut of Bray Wyatt, and Bray Wyatt got a flash pin on Roman, and then now it's like, wah! Now you got something. Now they're two bulls wanting to kill each other. If you give it a story that's this happened, then that happened, then this happened, then this happened, then that happened to get there, the fans are going to shit on
it. They're going to get lost, yeah.
They're going to shit on
it. You know, I kind of miss the days like the Royal Rumble 91 or 92 when Ric Flair became champion. I miss the days of the Rumble makes you the champion. Like, you win the belt at the Rumble.
Rumble make you the...
Well, that year when Ric Flair won, he won and he got the belt.
Oh.
There was no, it wasn't a shot at the champion in Mania. It was, you won, you survived, and he was like number two or three, I forget. It's like he survived all of those guys and became, like, that to me made so much sense as a kid.
That's really cool, yeah.
It's like, oh my God, Flair just beat, 29 other guys to become champion.
I mean, maybe they can bring back the Lethal Lottery pay-per-view, which is my favorite pay-per-view. I know we're going to cover this in the next, where they had tag teams. They had two rings set up.
Oh, with the different tag teams, right? Yeah.
And then the War Games survivors would go to the next ring. And the hot storyline at the time, and it's crazy that he's still wrestling, is Sting and Luger.
Yeah.
And they had Sting paired up with Abdullah the Butcher. They hated each other. And it was a great, like, they could do something similar to that, a cheap win, or maybe make it so physically exhausted for Reigns to win that it's not damaging to him to lose there. I mean, I like one belt. I'm not down with these two belts things. But
yeah, to me, it's an easy. To me, the easiest way out is just like you said, the three-way, the triple threat, whatever it is. But anyway, let's move on. Next story.
From I want to move on.
You don't wanna. I don't wanna. The next, we're gonna go into AEW territory.
Yeah.
Supposedly today, I have in my notes that there's no word, but supposedly today they lifted the suspensions on the outer guys because they suspended everybody that was in the room, apparently. So Nakazawa, Brandon Cutler, Pat Buck, all those guys' suspensions are up.
What about the dog?
The dog.
Daisy. No, it's CM Punk's dog was in the room.
Larry, dude. Larry.
Sorry, I didn't get the dog's name right.
Daisy.
Daisy.
Yeah, Harry.
But yeah, so those guys are fine. I mean, I don't even know why they got suspended in the first place. It makes no sense. They were just trying to help break up the fight. But anyway,
were they trying to help or were they there and they didn't do anything? That's why they got suspended. Who knows?
I don't know. There was no camera in the room, unfortunately.
Who knows what the hell's going on?
Maybe all this is bullshit anyway, and nothing actually happened. Who knows?
Do you think it's a work? You do?
I don't think it's a work.
I don't either.
I don't think it's a work. Yeah, I think it's a bunch of brats losing their mind.
Because, you know, in a weird way, though, I think it's helped AEW from the standpoint of it's all everyone's talking about.
Yeah, 2 weeks it's later. Trending on Twitter every day.
Like, Strowman debuted, and that was came back, and that was a big deal. And, you know, no one's really talking about it.
It's funny because a lot of this drama happens all the time in wrestling. I mean, our locker room is real harmonious, and we don't run weekly shows, so we don't really fall victim to that. But other companies that I've been with, this drama happens all the time. And a lot of time you use it, you know? So I think the MJF stuff was partly true, but I think that that was a work. And then I think this stuff is real.
Yeah. It just doesn't, you know, if it was a work, it doesn't
it just makes everybody look too bad.
That's what I was saying. It's just a bad look for everyone, even if it is a work.
I mean, I just bought 2 Kenny Omega shirts, man. I'm pissed.
Yeah, but I would disagree. I think the only people it makes look bad if it's a work are the people who really went in deep that it wasn't a work. I mean, the company will look fine. The company will look like geniuses. They've had the whole wrestling news coverage for 2 weeks. They'll actually look like geniuses.
Yeah, but if everybody finds out it's a work, then they'll never be able to do it again. They won't trust them again anyway.
But yeah. That's kind of the beauty of it, because I think we're finally getting back to that old school wrestling where you don't know what's real and you don't know what's not. I kind of like the idea of everyone losing trust, not believing the dirt sheets. I still believe they're being paid by Tony Khan to sort of feed us bits and pieces.
Well, I think it helps that CM Punk, you know, I have a few friends who work at AEW, and literally all of them is like, he's a dick. Like, nobody likes the guy. Now, maybe this is the ultimate way to build a character. Hey, just go be a dick for real.
I think it's real. I think it's generational why they don't like him, but I think it's real.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard he's a decent person. He's a decent human. I just
was
but
fine with
I don't know. Yeah. I'm like, he might be the greatest guy on earth, but
professionally it rubs people the wrong way. So that's, you know, whatever.
He says things like, "I'm running a business," and he cuts off the boss, and he says he just has a way about him that he's very, very confident.
Yeah, he totally buried Tony Khan in that press conference.
So, you know, but, you know, it is true that he did draw that house. Yeah. And if you're a smart businessman, you're going to go with the money. You're not going to bury that guy publicly and make him look like the biggest jerk in the world when he's responsible for your first $1 million house. Why would you work to turn that money faucet off?
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make sense from a business perspective.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally, you know, we had at this past Dynamite the tournament to replace Mr. Punk that we were talking about.
Tournament.
Yeah.
Oof.
And it's Mox and Danielson, the Blackpool Combat Club versus the Blackpool Combat Club, or the BBC or BCC. BBC. Big Black Cocks.
And you guys are worried about the stuff I'll say.
You don't even.
We're trying.
I'm 2 beers in. I'm going to start.
We're trying to have a legitimate conversation about the winner of this match. Eventually, is going to be
who's the big black cock that'll be champion at AEW? For real though, what do you think?
To the loser.
Yeah.
Well, one of them's fighting for real.
That'll be on YouTube or OnlyFans.
Well, this match is basically who loses to MJF at All or Nothing. So, like,
there's that too, because MJF is going to eventually cash in that chip.
There was just something you said there.
Uh-oh.
You know, the booking is very predictable. So to all of a sudden think that they're Machiavellian in their storytelling and they're so, you know what I mean? It's kind of like giving them a little too much credit.
Yeah.
Well, definitely with AEW, because, you know, I still am upset with how they had MJF lose to Wardlow. They squashed him. Yeah. So you built, like, I'm asking you this just as a dumb fan, and you're the booker. Tell me what I'm missing. You build up MJF as your heel of the company for a year, mm-hmm. and I thought they did a really good job of, you know, week after week, he's messing with Wardlow, and then Wardlow just smashes him in, like, 7 minutes.
Not even.
So what do you do with MJF after that? Is that why he maybe went away for a couple months?
Could have been, and he's the type of talent that understands how to keep his heat. He knows how to turn it on, off. He has full control of the people when he goes out there with that microphone. He's brilliant at it. The issue, I think, is whoever wrote that never laced up a pair of boots, because I've worked for writers before, and the writers are like, oh, yeah, he'll do that, and he'll squash him. And I'll be like, who's squashing who? What the fuck are you talking about? Like, they'll say things, or they'll do things, or they'll call out commands of things that they've never laced up a pair of boots, so they don't understand how it hurts, helps, anything. They're just so that decision was just another poor decision that was made, and it was done by somebody who's never laced up boots. And I've had people who've never laced up boots, you know, give me things. I just don't fucking listen.
Have you worked with MJF? Because he's MLW.
MJF's he was a great talent then. He's always been, he's just in the pocket. I've always had a great relationship
and
with
so
him.
Young.
Yeah, he's so young. Crazy. Dude. He's really good, man.
Wait, he gets it.
I don't know what he has, but he has it.
Like, he's got confidence. He's got confidence, and he understands he's got these parameters of his character. And he understands how to. It's almost like a guitarist that just knows how to play it. He just understands what to do. He gets what he is. Most guys go out there and they don't even understand what they're doing. Like, if you're like, what is going on? You got eyeliner on, but you got furry boots. You got you're like, what is happening with your character here? MJF just has it all dialed in, and like that Burberry scarf he's
got. I love it.
It's just always done. He's like guys like The Rock that do the elbow and the eyebrow all the time. And you're just like, again with the eyebrow. But to the casual fan, these calling cards work. They're you know, it's like Pavlov's dog, man. They get these people to react every single time. And MJF just gets the simplicity of pro wrestling. He understands that the quickest destination from point A to point B is a straight line. And he just gets it, man. And he never wanes from that formula and that character. He's brilliant at it, you know, because he's so simple, because it's so simplistic, and he's got it so dialed in.
I mean, as an older fan, I don't know who his idols were, but you could tell there's like a little bit of Rick Rude with the smirk and the smugness, a little bit of Mr. Perfect, like
Eddie Gilbert, maybe.
Yeah, and you know, maybe a little bit of the anger of Piper. You know, so I love that he's either directly or indirectly paying homage.
Sure.
Because we were both at that pipe bomb speech, and I can't call it the Kia Forum, the Forum.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen a promo where when he walked out, the crowd hated him. And then within 3 minutes, they loved him. I don't think I've ever seen that switch before in any wrestling promotion or promo. Like, that's unbelievable. He was able to turn them on a dime.
You know, the thing I love most about MJF is he's a testament to the fact that a gimmick and a promo is the strongest tool a wrestler has.
Right.
He doesn't do 800 million flips. You know, he just understands how to captivate an audience.
AEW sounds like a great place to work. You got MJF calling his boss a fucking mark on television, and then CM Punk sitting right next to his boss telling him that his company is shit and it's run by idiots and eating a cupcake the whole time.
Hey, Vince McMahon.
Fuck, I want that job. What the hell, man?
Wait, you guys...
He was licking his fingers while he was all bloody. It was skeeving me out.
That was a little, like, you know, I'm into some freaky stuff myself. That was like, all right, this is not a work.
Yeah.
Wait, do you guys not think that MJF is walking out with the title next week in New York?
I mean, maybe.
He's possible. Absolutely walking out of there with that title.
But if somebody's got to win the match, and then MJF walks
out. Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who wins the match.
I think Danielson has to win.
I think
it's too soon for MJF to get it, though. I think MJF gets it with a little more of a build, and it'll stick. I think if he gets it right off the bat, I think it's not going to be... I think he needs a couple more steps in front of him.
Let me ask you this. As a booker, it drove me batty on Dynamite when they have MJF stop his segment basically to bring out Stokely and six other guys.
The Firm.
And I love Morrissey. I love Stokely. Mm-hmm. I love the Gunn brothers. But the last thing MJF needs is a mouthpiece. And
yeah.
I get the backup, maybe Morrissey, to replace Wardlow, you know, in terms of that big...
It's just too much. It's 20 pounds of shit in a 10-pound bag.
It's like I literally related to this is like putting Virgil in the NWO. No offense, Virgil. Yeah, no I know offense. You're watching because no you're not offense. Booked. explain to me, like the writer, I guess Tony Khan. There's no writer in it. Like, what's the logic? Do you think of
getting people to fit in, man? Just getting them out there.
Too much talent and not enough TV time.
Yeah,
which I get, but to take away maybe the best heel on the mic in 20 years.
Yeah. Bad decisions.
Like, that's like insane.
Yeah.
So you say no MJF. So Mox or Danielson? I think it's Danielson's time, but who knows?
I think, Mox has had it, and I think he's actually in AEW great with it. I would love to see Danielson with it because I'm just personally a fan of his work and what he can do. I think Danielson gets to that next level of over, I mean, just the yes stuff was just crazy. But I think MJF just, I don't think it's the time for him to have it yet. You know, I mean, they might put it on him early, but I think putting it on him early is a mistake.
Yeah.
I think if they have it to where when he gets it, it just depends on, first of all, there's no logic. So it's really difficult to wrap your head around it. And then it really depends on what you're going to do with him. It's going to be difficult, like The Rock, and I did just compare him to The Rock, didn't I? It's going to be difficult to keep him heel because
people love him.
People are just going to, people love to be in on the joke with him. They love to be like, yeah, he's a jerk. They love it.
And his parents do it. His parents are on TV with signs, and MJF is an asshole.
See, I don't want him as a face. Like, I know
he's not going to change, but he's going to be a baby face. You know what I mean?
The crowd's going to cheer him.
And it's going to be like Stone Cold. Stone Cold didn't change the way he worked, but the crowd loved him, and then he just started to...
lean into it a little bit.
He just would like answer him back, and he would kind of, but he still, cheated. He still nut shotted. He still punched. He still, drank the beer. He cussed. He did everything.
Flip everybody off.
Yeah. He was super, a baby face in the 80s didn't, yell at people's faces after he's knocked them out and all that. So he still worked, like a heel. Actually, he did a lot of people from the old school would say he did a lot of damage to the business, but you really couldn't have gone any other way in that era. It was like nobody the way Hogan, the business went completely down with Hogan was because nobody wanted that. And then Vince tried to bring it back with Cena. And although Cena sold the most merch and it was very, very kid friendly, the business was kind of lame with that sort of
stuff. I wasn't
watching
when Cena was champ.
It was more of a kid show,
Yeah. So, John, we know you want MJF.
I think he hates
Mox.
I'm not a fan of his work either.
I think Mox made it clear that he's an ADA guy, Bryan Danielson made it clear that he's not doing the yes chance to not disrespect WWE. So I think they're building Mox up to be their Ric Flair. They're going to keep giving him titles, and he's going to...
Yeah, he's not Ric Flair.
He's already at the four-time champ. He's like the four-time champ already. So I think Mox wins, gets beat by MJF. MJF and Bryan Danielson go into a feud. Mox goes on the vacation he was supposed to have 2 weeks ago. And
I don't think MJF gets it. Is it Wednesday?
Yeah.
Mox might win, and then MJF comes out, beats him up, and challenges him. I think that happens on a pay-per-view.
Nope.
No?
Should.
And here's the thing that's really alarming. I don't want to see MJF versus Mox, and I don't want to see MJF versus Danielson. I don't want to see either of those matches. I don't give a shit about any of them. So the only thing that I would want to see is Punk and MJF. Or Punk and Cabana, or give me a match that has something behind it. Give me something I can sink my teeth into. Like, I don't want to see any of those other matches. They don't mean fuck all. You know?
MJF Orange Cassidy would be kind of great.
Ugh.
I just think Orange Cassidy has that like that he could poke at him, and MJF can play it up really well. I think they'd have a fun dynamic for the audience in there. I don't know if it'll be a great.
I think he is a very niche
Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, I don't see him as a main event player at all. I think he's in that Santino Morello kind of
Really?
That,
but what if they drop the humor angle on him?
I mean, that's his whole thing is he doesn't do anything. Like it's like
No, I get it.
Yeah, I just don't see how. That's one of those things where everybody makes fun of you for watching wrestling. You know, it's like if you have people over your house and you're watching a pay-per-view and you have Bryan Danielson in there and you have Kurt Angle in there and you have MJF that can entertain you or you have The Rock, you'll forget about the people's elbow with The Rock in there because he's so goddamn entertaining. You know, I mean, Orange Cassidy is like, I don't get it. Like, that's very generational. Like, his stuff is very, very, what do they call it?
Gen Z, millennial.
Yeah, bullshit. I don't know. I don't get it. Yeah. You know, so it's like, it just, to me, it's like.
It's a common meme in the wrestling Twitter world where it's like, oh, you know, you say wrestling isn't fake, then explain this. And then it's either the Michael Jackson guy or
that
the pizza
amazing.
Guy.
Yeah. Santana Jackson.
Yeah.
I know you could never do that on TV because you would need the rights to Michael Jackson's music, but he's pretty good wrestler.
Put it this way. If you're booking a show and in the middle of the show, this guy comes out and does that, the whole crowd's going to lose their mind.
It's Moonwalk DDT.
Yeah.
And then
it's ridiculous.
I'm telling you.
It's ridiculous, but it's a brilliant mid-card ridiculousness comic relief that is a palate cleanser that people lose their shit over. And it'll probably sell a butt ton of merchandise.
I'd never seen him before, so he did this thing the last match I saw him where he's getting beat down and he's like basically unconscious. And then the Thriller music hits, and like he powers up, and all of a sudden the ref comes out with the wolf mask. And
oh, my God.
But that was in a night of incredibly violent matches. So
it's a palate cleanser,
100%.
Yeah.
Well, the AEW brought on the pizza guy that went viral on Twitter last
week. I'm offended
week.
By that as an Italian.
Is that guy a wrestler?
Good wrestler or just a pizza guy?
He's really good at flinging around the pizza thing. But,
okay.
But
so not a good wrestler.
Why is that not racist? I don't get it.
It's pretty over the top.
Yeah, I don't
he's
get
He's got
it.
The mustache.
Yeah, he's the pizza pie. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
I am not offended by it, seriously, but it's like, other people are offended about other things. I mean, it seems like it's in the same ballpark.
Well, in the world of wrestling, I mean, I'm not going to mention any particular names.
Yeah,
but
you should.
What they did to poor Kamala.
Like, oh, here we go.
Making this guy an... I can't speak English. She just communicates by going like this.
I mean, that's how I talk to my wife, but anyway. You know, the pizza guy thing, at least he came out in AEW and they kicked him in the face immediately before he even said a word.
Yeah, it's turned into backyard wrestling. Like, it's backyard wrestling on TV. It's kind of silly.
Well, we got answers from everybody but you. Who do you think wins this match?
I mean, I want Danielson to, although I would love to see a program at some point with Mox and MJF just for the promos. Although I do find Mox a little one-note, goes through the crowd.
Yeah.
And you know Warrior's my guy, but it's very Warrior-like where he shakes the ropes, he goes like this. And
it's like a modern-day Sandman.
And I'm a...
Yeah.
Love Sandman.
Big fan of Sandman, although when I saw him in his last match at the Olympic Auditorium in front of literally 100 people...
I've had some great ones with him, man. He's a fun opponent.
I was there for him.
I've had some good ones with him. I've worked with him a few times. And,
well, he did come out with major guns that night. So, well, let me ask you this about Sandman. I know we're kind of going all over the place, but I have to, while we're here.
Yeah.
You know, he's been known to maybe be a tad reckless at times just because of the 10 beers he drinks. Is it hard to work with a wrestler that's known for being reckless at times?
I've never had an issue with him. And the thing that I love the most about him is his entrance is so over. And he's so over that half your job is done by the time he comes out. So, I remember the first time he came in and I cut off his entrance. And then he came in a second time and he goes, hey, kid, last time you cut off my entrance. And I'm like, yeah, because you're coming back the next month. I go, watch, I'm going to give it all this time. And then I did a fireball and he was just like, oh, we have a really great rapport, me and him. And, you know, the Singapore cane's in there, but it's a Singapore cane. I mean, you know what I mean? It's it hits you. And it hurts like a Singapore, but I grew up with, you know, Sicilian mother who beat the hell out of me with wooden spoons and pots and pans and you know, just out of love. So it was not that big of a deal, but you know, it's in there. It's stiff.
No, I did a comedy show with him once.
He's a lot, but he's great.
I mean, this particular show, a comic would walk out with a wrestler. So my buddy Zoltan walks out with Sandman, and Sandman's like, hey, I'm just going to hit you in the shoulder with the stick. Don't worry about it. It won't hurt at all. And he might have had a few bears in him. And he hit Zoltan as hard as I've ever seen him hit Rhino right in the middle of the head.
Fuck.
And my buddy loved it. He's like, oh, my God, I'm bleeding from Sandman. I'm like, I don't know about that.
I got a poor cane will bite you. Like it's and you gotta clip the what do you call it? It's the ropes.
Right.
If you don't clip the ropes, it's stiff. So if you clip the ropes, it'll bend on you.
I got to thank you because thanks to PCW Ultra, I got to hang out with Sandman till like 4 a.m. drinking tequila shots and beer and talking about crypto. It was amazing.
Are you thanking me or you're mad at me?
No, it was amazing. It was amazing.
I don't know if I would take crypto advice from Sandman.
Oh, I didn't take the advice. I just let him talk. He's very, very apt.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. He's actually.
But he gave me a Sandman koozie.
Bro, to take home as let me tell you about crypto, bro.
Oh, my God. Anyway. All right. Great Danielson.
I think Danielson will win.
MJF takes it back that night? Or?
I hope he doesn't do it that night because I do think it's too...
Yeah.
Build up MJF a little bit more because you tore him down in one match and then maybe it all or nothing, Danielson and MJF.
That's one thing is like a booker has to keep something in his back pocket too. Like they give you everything with the kitchen sink, like every single thing and throwing more people out there and everybody's got a promo and it's like, man, like... We got a year worth of stuff we can do here. You know what I mean? That you at least can stretch out a couple of those shows in a couple months. Come on.
Yeah. Is there more pressure on AEW since they only do 4 pay-per-views a year? Because I agree with you. Like, they do give away a lot on free TV.
Yeah.
Which is great as a fan. But then, you know, like the last pay-per-view I thought was a little soft on like the oh my God moment.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have that balance of making the, you know, it's just like, comedians, like when you have enough material, you do a special because it's special. You're doing a pay-per-view because it's special.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, just doing it all on TV and then now now you got to pay for this one. Like, you know, you got to make it special.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That makes sense. All right. And then let's do, you know, we're running a little long, but let's do this final topic of the week. Pay-per-view gimmicks is what I chose. So let's ask, everybody can answer. We'll go one by one. Favorite pay-per-view gimmick. And by this, I mean like TLC or Hell in a Cell or, you know, those type of gimmick, like pay-per-views where it's like, you know, Hell in a Cell specifically is themed after that match. What would you say is your favorite pay-per-view gimmick?
Well, it also might be the worst pay-per-view gimmick. When Abdullah the Butcher got electrocuted.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if it was a pay-per-view. I'm almost positive it was.
Yeah.
It was on I believe it was a pay-per-view.
Was it the Clash of the Champions? Or
yes. And the electric chair switch
right.
was in the off position the whole time because it couldn't go to the on position. So Cactus Jack had to hold it like it was broken, the switch.
Right,
it was a little AEW-ish.
Right.
And so he had already started getting electrocuted even though the switch was in the off position. I know I'm overanalyzing this, but...
What was that match called?
The electric chair match?
I forget, but it had some, you know, the Steiners were in it, Abdullah the Butcher, a prime Abdullah the Butcher.
No, I remember the match, and Abdullah was going...
And clearly Cactus Jack is trying to figure out what angle, you know, he doesn't know what the hell is going on. If that's not a pay-per-view match, I'll go with the Lethal Lottery.
Well, okay, so that's... what you were describing is favorite gimmick match in a pay-per-view, which was the second one, but I'm talking about the pay-per-view itself as a gimmick. TLC.
Oh, Hell the in whole a pay-per-view cell. Has... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But that was the second question, so you already answered the
second.
Okay,
never mind. Lethal Lottery. Sorry. Lethal I'm Lottery. All over the place. I'm excited, man. I mean, you're a great guest. Like,
thank you.
How many people can bring up Abdullah the Butcher and talk about Austin Theory in the same hour?
I actually talked to Abdullah the Butcher on the phone about a month ago.
Oh, my God.
Next, hey, if we come back, I'll call Abby on the show.
Oh, that might be a four-hour podcast. I got some questions for him.
I told him one time I was going to bring him into Florida, and I told him, and also, I'm going to get you a box of cigars. He says, I don't work for cigars, kid.
Oh!
And I said, I'm giving you them in addition. I'm going to take you to the... I don't work. He couldn't get it in his head. He kept saying, I don't work for cigars. Okay.
For me, I am a big fan of the Rumble. I think that's a great gimmick. That's my favorite pay-per-view gimmick. John, how about you?
Rumble?
How about you?
Yeah, the Rumble is just stood the test of time, and it's just exciting with all the guests and who's going to be in it, and it's got the, every 2 minutes it's got a huge pop,
Well, two minutes.
Yeah.
They go depending on how much pay-per-view time they got left.
Right. Yeah, I like the Rumble, I think. But I also like that that was a match, the Skywalker. It was a terrible match where the scaffold match
back
in the day. But the buildup of that match was like, it was terrifying.
Are you talking about the Cactus Jack?
No. The Road Warriors against the Midnight Express where Jim Cornette busted both of his knees out. Was it the Skywalkers or something like
something
that?
Like
I forget
that, yeah.
the name of that match.
Well, that's the second one. So what's your favorite gimmick match in any pay-per-view? It would be that?
That match, because it was just and it wasn't that the match even delivered. I mean, it did kind of it was just them kind of, being terrified that they were up so high because obviously for obvious reasons, but the description of that match and then the friggin' scaffold being so tall just commanded respect. You know what I mean? It was just such a cool thing, such a cool visual.
How about you? You said already that.
But you really can't do it again.
The electrical chair match. Would that be your favorite?
Yeah, because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah,
How about you, John?
I mean, I have to go with the Rumble again. It's just the biggest
just that
surprise.
That gimmick match is your favorite.
I like Buried Alive also. That's always interesting. But...
Is Buried Alive the one where Taker would beat you and then throw dirt on you?
No,
he's been buried
a
few times. I think that was the lead up to the big to that big WrestleMania return against Kane. But yeah, when people get buried in dirt. Dirt grave.
The Undertaker's first casket match was against Mr. James Harris.
Oh, Kamala. Did you ever hear his album?
Kamala Speaks. The song he did about Pat Patterson, I thought, I'd buy that on Spotify.
It
had a nice Jamaican, the guy had a good voice.
It wasn't bad.
Horrible hygiene, but, good voice.
Yeah.
For me, it's Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. That three-way with the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, and the Hardys.
Well, that's a good one. Yeah, especially the time. It was very innovative. Like it was that was a really, really cool match. It really changed the trajectory of that sort of the daredevilness of wrestling. That really, really, turned everybody into a maniac after that.
Yeah. And then finally, we got worst gimmick match. I've got two. And the first one is, who's Dominic Mysterio's actual father match? I'm your puppy. That one's pretty bad. And the other one, I'm forgetting the name of the woman, but there was a woman on a pole.
Judy Bagwell on a pole.
Judy Bagwell on a pole match. What the fuck? Anyway, yeah, those are my picks. Worst gimmick match for you.
You guys are talking a lot about the Royal Rumble.
You don't like the Rumble?
No. When they did the Legends Royal Rumble, with all the older guys, it was like they were making fun of them, and I don't like that.
Piper in it.
I like Kamala was in it, and he could barely walk to the ring, and the Sheik, and I don't like when they're made fun of.
Yeah, it's sad. You don't want to see that.
I get it. You know, Orange Cassidy, you make fun because he's a humor guy. Santana Jackson, that's the shtick.
Sure.
But like when you're basically mocking these older guys,
right.
I just don't. And the worst, can I do one more?
Yeah.
It's the New Jack Vic Grimes scaffold match, because you talk about, when no one was on the scaffold and it's moving already, this is insane. And then, the ending was like, I don't know how he wasn't sued for throwing Vic Grimes off. With an actual taser. We're talking assault.
Yeah, I mean, New Jack had a lot of revisionist history. I don't know if he tased him off of
it looked real.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he might have pulled him down. I don't know, but that he, yeah.
I mean, in terms of just the worst match, this is so and I was there. I was actually there, yeah. So to see it live was.
It's really weird to be a wrestler in that scenario and be like, okay, I'm going to do that. And nobody checking anything. I would never put myself in that position. I just don't understand how you would be up there and it's,
It was shaky.
I would have first of all, I would have never agreed to that match. I would have been yeah, right. It's just too dangerous. But I mean, not checking that thing and not knowing what you were dealing with before. Oh, that's nuts.
Because I think they had this particular organization has essentially ring boys setting everything up. So if you ever see that match again, you can see all the tables that were built like a pyramid to break Vic Grimes' fall were too far under the main scaffold. So he was never going to be able to break fall.
That requires schooling and education.
I've been in wrestling for 25 years, and I've seen everybody in and out of this business, and I wouldn't trust pretty much anybody to do that. The stuff that happens in wrestling that people we're going to do that, and then you look at it and you're like, that's too high. You can't do that. Nobody thinks about anything because there's so many jobs to do the day of the show that everybody overlooks everything. So if you're doing anything like the Owen Hart thing, or you're doing anything that is that dangerous, dude, I would never put my life in that.
Yeah, these are the same people. These are the same people that are doing that stupid milk crate challenge that are just stacking up milk crates and then dying.
And most of the people that are handling that part of it are people you wouldn't want to bring your groceries into the house. They couldn't handle that. Ridiculous.
John, worst gimmick match.
I hate anything where one of your arms or you're blindfolded, where a limb is completely or a sense is completely taken away. I hate the bull rope match. It just leads for a boring fucking match.
Yeah, didn't Ronda Rousey do that?
I hate that.
With an arm behind my back.
Or blindfolded bull rope. What are you going to do? The one thing is they just pull each other into the ring post. So I'm like, okay, we saw that coming. It's just a boring match when somebody can't use everything that they have.
Uh-oh. Girl, what you got?
I did think of one other.
Oh, boy.
I'm not going to mention the company. It was a Raw sewage match.
Oh.
Where around the ring, you have these kiddie pools of doo-doo. And then the final, I'll send you guys the final, the finale, where they're up probably 100 feet, maybe 150 feet, and how the two guys managed to land in this kiddie pool of duty. It's really just the premise of a raw sewage, man.
I just like hearing Earl say duty.
Yeah, can you stop calling shit duty?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to, you know, I know YouTube.
There's a bunch
weird.
Of children here. He doesn't want to.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of fans that are not of age.
Oh, that, no. All right. Anyway, what's your worst gimmick, man?
You know, I wasn't prepared, but after hearing that, I mean, the blindfold match is terrible.
Yeah, it's
pretty
bad.
I'm going to have to agree. You know, the slot matches. The you remember the Finney, the Godwins would do the slot matches.
Oh God,
same thing. Yeah, super dumb.
Yeah.
But blindfold matches have got to be the worst.
God, didn't they do that like not recently, but like within the last few years, they had Roman Reigns in a fucking like dog food thing, right?
So stupid.
Wasn't it? Didn't they pour dog food all over somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, you do that with like a manager when two managers wrestle each other or something like that, you give it some kind of funny stipulation. But somebody like Roman Reigns in that's just
that was with McIntyre and they didn't have any audience. I was like, they're really clamoring for anything at this point.
Weird shit.
That reminds me of Moondog Maine. Like that's way back, and he would open up a can of Alpo and just eat it on TV.
That's probably the Cormel chip.
But that was also Vince McMahon doing those doing the mud matches back on the stage, like during the Attitude Era, like
that
was the
when they were called Divas. Were they Divas then?
Yeah, Divas. Divas.
Get out of here. Yeah, Vince was sitting there jerking off in Gorilla.
The empty arena matches. Those were kind of.
I don't mind those. The Rock, the halftime match, The Rock and Mankind. That was kind of great.
You could tell a good story there. Like the best one ever was Terry Funk and Lawler. But it's still it's there's no crowd. So
you need
the
crowd.
It's really difficult for the guys to perform that way, you know, because you're feeding off the people, and wrestling's really weird when there's no noise.
Yeah,
you know, it's really really strange. So it's you know,
but on the pandemic era was very strange.
On the flip side, when there is an audience and they start fighting backstage, I'm like, this is garbage.
Yeah,
like when they start taking it to concession, I'm like, these guys paid money to watch you guys do this in a ring. Like, what are we doing? I hate all of that shit. Just keep it in the arena at least.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode.
On that note.
Joseph, thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you, guys.
Plug away. Let everybody know about PCW Ultra's coming show in October, where to get tickets, where do they find you, all the stuff.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. So PCW Ultra, we're going to have a show October the 21st in Southern California. You can find everything from Twitter, Facebook, everything on PCWUltra.com. That's also where you can buy tickets. We are currently on Pivot Share, but we are moving everything to Fight TV. We'll be having iPay-per-views in the very near future. And if you're in the area, come on in and see us, because we have one of the greatest fan interactive shows, fan experience shows in the business. We have beer, food, and AC.
Oh, yeah. AC is so important.
So important. Yeah. I don't know why wrestling companies don't have AC.
Dude, I used to go to bar wrestling, and I would have to go outside every fucking few minutes because it was a sauna.
Yeah,
it was insane.
You get yourself a cold beer in the AC.
Yeah, and there's really cool vendors. Selling like lucha masks and vintage toys and stuff. It's a really good experience. I'm going to be there.
You've even found you could even find a breeze inside of our building.
Yeah,
It's a very nice, cool, large building.
Yeah, it's a big building. Yeah. I'll be there.
Want to come.
You are invited every single time. Okay. You all can come and bring a friend.
And social medias for you?
Social media for me is at Joseph Samael. That's JOSEFSAMAEL. And everything is at PCW Ultra.
Awesome. And for me, you can find me at RRBG Podcast. I just put out an episode with the legendary Sasha K of KMFDM. Got one coming up next week with Dennis from Refused. I've been talking to a lot of legends, so I'm really excited. It's been going really well. So at RRBG Podcast, come check it out. Earl, where do they find you?
At Earl Skakel everywhere, even on TikTok. And, I'm here at the Comedy Store a few times a week. So if you want to come down, just let me know on Instagram. I'll take care of it. And that's it.
Yep, and please follow us at Comedy Store Wrestling on Instagram, at Store is War on Twitter. Send us an email, comedystorewrestling@gmail.com. Thanks for watching and listening. Cheers.